You're listening to Momentum, a show that helps men succeed in life.
Men lived in incredibly close connection and communities until literally about, you'd say the Industrial Revolution, but even in the 1950s, men were probably still hanging out more than they are. So there's just been this absolute historical rupture, and it's hard to put that back together.
Now, here's your hosts, Tim and Des.
Okay, well, it is Momentum all around Australia. Once again, we are so thrilled to have you tuning in and trust that you are well. Just pointing you to our website real quick, momentumaustralia.org. You can find out a bit more about who we are, what we're doing, why we're here, and of course, links to some of our previous podcasts, some stuff there that's going to help you as well. And there's a very important number on the website too, which we'd love you to check out at some stage. And my good friend and co-host Des is going to give you a bit more information about that. But Des, how are you, my friend? Are you doing well?
Yeah, really good, man. Really good. And yeah, and our car line is very important to us, and it's very important to you. So it's a facility that's available to you 7 days a week from 9 a.m. to 11 p.m. You can phone this number that I'm just about to give you, and there'll be somebody to take the call, and they can help you. And it's a safe and secure environment to have an open conversation about your world. The number is 1-800-000-MEN, 1-800-000-636. And so that number is available. It's a great facility that we have. So yeah,
it is. And you know, we've talked about this on the show. It is one of the core things of Momentum. Is our heart is to get guys connected, to get you connected, and not just connected, but talking about stuff that's actually happening in your world as opposed to sitting on the surface. And you know, when we have this guest on the show, we never sit at the surface. We plunge to the depths very quickly. And I'm sure we're going to do that again this week. It's Jonathan Doyle back on the show, mate. How are you, man?
You just said that so well. I'm good. I'm great. I'm good. No surface. What's the old saying? All killer, no filler. We're going to get straight into the good stuff.
Let's start plunging. Let's take a deep breath and start plunging. Look, in all seriousness, Jonathan, we did talk last time about shame and this idea of having conversations and getting stuff off our chests. Let's just start the show there, I think, just quickly. From your perspective, and just to encourage the guys listening, because you know we've all been on the journey. I'm talking about the three of us here, where we've had to learn the hard way that hey, we need other guys in our lives. It's good for us to have other guys in our lives, and most importantly, it's good for other guys to know what's happening in our lives. And for a lot of guys, that is confronting. So I suppose just bouncing off the back of the Caroline piece, let's start there and go pushing through the shame thing, pushing through the embarrassment of some stuff, but what's the benefit of that? What's the good stuff of having that accountability, responsibility, sharing stuff, that safe space?
The absolute genius of Homo sapiens sapiens was that we're a species that is designed to read facial cues, body language, tonality, to actually be in relationship with each other. So you could say that probably since the Industrial Revolution, like 1860s, there's been this incredible fragmentation where so many men particularly have been separated from these kinds of communities and connections and relationships that are just so crucial. Like last night was my son's birthday, he's 14, and he had a bunch of his friends over, they're great kids, and just seeing the kind of ease in which they all enjoy each other's company, and there's just a freedom and a joy and a simplicity about it. And at that same dinner last night, my best mate, who I've been super close to for probably 25 plus years, we had a deep conversation at the table when everybody kind of drifted away. So, Tim, I'd say that the need for masculine friendship and connection has never been greater because of the level of fragmentation, stress, busyness, disconnection. I'd also suggest that what's really helpful is trying to create context for that. So one of the things I did here for a few years was I'd have a fire every Friday afternoon, a bunch of guys come around. So you've got to create good context for this, because if you don't, you actually can get pretty hurt, because you might want to connect with somebody and it's the wrong context and they're too busy and they're not. So creating environments where you can actually just connect with close male friends is kind of crucial.
So how do you find the right person to connect with? Are there any tips you have? So, you know, I'm you know, a loner, and I want to have somebody I can confide in. What sort of person do I look for?
Yes, there's one great big thing to look for. Look for somebody who has suffered. Look for someone who's been run over by the bus of life at some point. Because I've got a close male friend, God bless him, who has just been absolutely flattened. And he went through a particular situation in a relationship breakdown that, to his credit, I think he conducted himself incredibly well, and but just got flattened. And the level of suffering that I watched him go through over an extended period of time, there is a safety and a groundedness and a goodness in him that you struggle to find elsewhere. So often it's finding somebody who has lived a bit of life and been through some difficulty, and some of that pride and toughness has been sanded off. Yeah. I think those kind of people, that's my number one tip. I look for people who, I just look for people who know what it's like to endure.
Yeah. Wow. That's great.
I have a good friend who says, and I've probably said this once before on the show, never trust anyone who doesn't walk with a limp.
That's good.
Yeah. And it's essentially what you're saying in a different way. Yeah. But
and look, it does my head in. I'll be straight up. I get frustrated with guys that just can't do depth. I'm just kind of like not that I just in every conversation look for that, but I'm like, But again, it comes to context. Sometimes you've just got to create an environment. My go-to for that is fire. Just set fire to something. The minute you have a fire, guys will start talking.
Yes, preferably a fire pit, right? Not the house.
Yeah, like just, don't do it in a cafe or something. That's just awkward. Apparently the government says you can't just randomly set fires in a cafe, but.
Jonathan, let me ask just quickly, right, while we're on this. We all agree that getting together is good, particularly as guys, right? Whether it's fires, preferably outside of a cafe. But in all seriousness, what keeps guys out of that space? Why is it that most men, and there'd be all three of us at some point in our life, obviously we came to that realization that we needed to do this differently, but a lot of guys listening will keep themselves out of that space of depth with other men. Why is that? Is it identity? Is it shame? Is it that we feel we're not good enough? Other things as well, all three, more of it. What is it?
Abject existential terror. That's what does it. It's like, I've got one guy that I'm friends with who's just, it's about the story that you're living in. Like he's living in a story where everything is about work. Everything is about work. It's just that there's a drivenness there that comes out of wounds. Like it just does. You have to live kind of long enough to see that. Workaholism particularly comes out of deep wounds of inadequacy and not being enough. And so what keeps them out of it, Tim, is usually the story that they're in, right? It's usually the I'm too busy story, or I've got to do this, got to do that. Look, I'm really big on environment, so I just think you have to be very deliberate. If something's important enough in your life, you've got to be deliberate. So I've been taking the kids camping heaps, and I did a podcast about this, and one of the things is in the lead up to going camping, you're like, this is the dumbest idea ever. This is such a pain in the butt. Why am I doing this? The minute you're sitting around that campfire, you're like, I'm a genius. This is the best thing I've ever done. And so I often think with men, like, the dislocation of the last few years has probably affected a lot of us too, but you got to be deliberate. You got to go, right, this matters. My friends matter. We got to make time to do this. And so, Tim, I just think it's terror. It's kind of like men are just, I'm too busy. I'm this, I'm that. I've got to do this. And we've lost the value of it.
Just they're too comfortable.
We've lost, Des, it's too comfortable. We've lost the value of it. We don't realize that it's got to be fought for.
Is that terror attached to our identity or how we feel about ourselves? You understand what I'm driving there? Do we stay out of that space? Because let's be honest, when most guys go into a room full of other blokes, our masculinity is perhaps threatened depending on how we feel about ourselves. And we'll look around the room and we'll gauge each other and we'll size each other up. And if we're not confident in who we are, you know, we don't let down the facade, that can be intimidating for a lot of guys. So it's easier to stay away from that space. Is that then, when you boil it down, something to do with our identity and how we feel about ourselves deep down?
There's so much in that, Tim. The incredible power of vulnerability in the right context, it's such a disarming and powerful thing when people are really honest about where they're at. And I think if any man has had an experience of being honest or vulnerable and not having that received, that's quite devastating. You know, it's quite devastating to put yourself out there and just people are not open or available to hearing it, or other men aren't. Yeah, I've had experiences of that where you sort of want to be honest about where you're at and the person you're talking to just doesn't receive it. So I guess it's that old biblical concept of not throwing your pearls before pigs, right? I think you've really got to be careful about who you trust and who you're honest and vulnerable with.
Yes.
But like, Tim, you know, the whole hyper-masculine thing, I get it, because I kind of lived in that world for a long time. And just see, eventually time is going to take that. So the second half of life, or as you get a little bit older, it's going to get taken. So you can fight that as much as you want. Like if being hyper-masculine and self-protective has been your go-to, eventually time is going to take that. So I think learning to kind of just be more open and vulnerable in the right context over time is a pretty good strategy.
Do you think older men find it easier to make that connection as opposed to younger?
No, I think what's happened is, Richard Rohr said this better than anybody I've heard. He said, his quote was, "My sense with the older generation is that they have not become elders, they've simply become elderly."
Wow.
And Des, honestly, like you would be an exception to that. Like, you're somebody that, as you've, you know, and you're not super old, I still see you as not, I think, you know, I'm trying to get out of my
foot. the hole you just dug for yourself.
digging a hole here. Put the shovel down.
Des, as you've aged, you've kind of asked yourself a question, which is, how do I contribute?
Yeah.
How do I take the wisdom of, how does Des take the wisdom of all those years and offer it in service to others? That's what an elder is. Whereas being elderly means you just read the paper and complain about everything. So, I think there's, I've grieved that. Like, you know, my father died, it was his anniversary a week ago, about 13 years ago. My grandfather died 30, 40 years before I was born. I never really knew my mother's. So I've had a complete absence of older men in my life, complete absence. So I think there's such a huge need for that at the moment.
Totally. Just role models, just, you know, the wisdom of age, I guess.
Yeah. It's a crying shame, Des. It's just, I wouldn't even know where to go. And not just it. You know, men that have lived but have really tried to live, like to be older but to still be in the game, to still be growing spiritually, relationally, you know, like you just don't meet enough of them at the moment. Maybe they're there, but they've just, no one's helped them realize that they're still needed.
That could be true too, that, you know, they have so much to offer and don't know how to offer it.
Yeah,
or to whom,
That we kind of get forgotten about because we're looking at a younger, hypier, it's a different perspective. It's like we say we want the wisdom, but then do we look to those who perhaps might have it to glean from?
Yeah.
You know, because often they can be old and dittery and sometimes a little random and you know, we don't give them much time. I'm just being honest, you know, like, and so they kind of sit at the back and they come and go. And as Des said, I think, well, nobody actually approaches them and says, "Hey, would you mind coming to the men's group this week and just sharing a bit about your story?" You know, like, do we give them that invitation?
At least in the church setting, is that you need good leaders who are switched on to the need for it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The churches in general just don't do that. They have, you know, for example, they have a monthly, you know, men's get together where the guys go and have breakfast and somebody speaks, and Tim and I have talked about this at length, I guess, it negates the whole opportunity for men to sit alongside each other and talk about, you know, what's happening in their world. They don't have the opportunity to do that.
And yeah. If you think about this, Des, in terms of like human history, men lived in incredibly close connection and communities until literally about, gosh, you'd say the Industrial Revolution, but even in the 1950s, men were probably still hanging out more than they are. Yeah. So there's just been this absolute historical rupture.
Mm.
And it's hard to put that back together.
We've covered a fair bit of ground in the first part of the show. We are going to take a short break and come back once again with Jonathan Doyle. In the meantime, a couple of websites for you. Jonathan's website, jonathandoyle.co. I mean, there's so much on his website, so much that this guy just brings to Momentum every single time. But as we take a short break, also encourage you to have a look around our website too. That's momentumaustralia.org. And we'll come back with the second part of the show in just a moment.
This is Momentum, a show that helps men succeed in life. Find out more at momentumaustralia.org.
You are listening to Momentum, and we are literally all around Australia thanks to 37, 38 radio stations, I think it is, I'm not sure. But there's a bunch of them taking the show, which we appreciate. And look, invariably it enables us to chat to people just like you. And hopefully what we're talking about over the weeks is just sowing little bits into your life that's going to help you do life that little bit better. MomentumAustralia.org, by the way, is the website. We've got Jonathan Doyle with us this week. And as we said at the beginning of the show, we can go anywhere. But generally where we go is down to the depths and plunge into the depths of deep stuff and uncovering stuff. And one thing, I suppose, Jonathan, that I want to bounce off as we come into the second part of the show is this idea of intentionality. Right. Nothing happens without intentionality. And particularly when it's guys getting together, it's not going to happen without being intentional. And I can attest to that in my own life and still have frustrations around trying to get guys together, get them to see the importance of being intentional, meeting up, doing this thing to call life together. Off the back of that, though, being intentional, I want to bounce off that and say this idea of life is happening for you. Right. And we've talked about this on the show before. Life happens for me, not to me. Can you explain that for me? Because as a Christian man, sometimes that can be a little confusing at times.
Yeah, this one's pretty simple to talk about, at least. we inhabit a highly therapeutic culture. So psychology is pretty young. You know, the first psychology textbook only really came out in 1901. From William James. And there's kind of the idea that if we're experiencing some kind of psychic discontent, psychological discontent, that there must be some problem and that we must find a way to ameliorate it so that we feel better again. Hmm. So it's a culture where what we call the vector of aspiration, the general trajectory of the culture is a pleasure-seeking culture. Because it's consumerist, because the essential engine of the culture is late stage capitalism, right? So the culture is innately geared towards consumption, pleasure, enjoyment. And look, and let's be honest, I keep saying to people when I'm on stage that for as much as you want to complain about modern life, never forget that a flushing toilet is a big deal. Like just because most of human history, right. So let's be grateful for what we do have. So the dark side of that whole therapeutic approach is that when something's difficult, it's often seen as pathological. Mm-hmm. So if there is suffering in your life, it's kind of like, well, it must be either somebody's fault or as quickly as possible. So the other perspective, the other approach you can take is to literally begin to say to yourself and to internalize the truth that your problems are actually your friends. The problems in your life exist to make you better. And if you begin to approach life that way, you start to play a bit of a different game. You don't ever go, well, this is fantastic, I'm so excited, but you begin to pursue the possibilities of difficulty. Hmm. And I've done that primarily through things like ultramarathons and stuff where it's like, see, ultra marathons are not about fitness. They're just about pain. They're nothing to do with, I mean, the base fitness. But so often I've learned to pursue those difficult, hard things. So the concept of life happening to you means we're all good when it's good. Like, it's like if good stuff's happening, we're like, oh, it's great. It's unicorns and rainbows and I deserve this because I'm special. Whereas life happening to you also means that the difficulties are invitations to growth. And most of us can look back on life and agree. We'll look back and go, oh, yeah, I went through this. It was awful. But out of the backside of that, I became who I am now. So we need to be a little bit more thankful for the difficulties because they either break you. So you either get broken by them, in which case you end up in blame, bitterness, resentment, anger, or eventually you grow through them and you become wise and grateful. Easy to say, harder to do.
Mm. And stronger.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. And humans can endure, right? Like, it's amazing what people can endure. I was at a footy game on the weekend and I saw this older couple whose son was in my class at school and he was a fantastic guy, tragically died, had young kids and he died quite suddenly and it was just tragic. And I was looking at her and, you know, she was smiling and talking to people. It was curious because I thought, wow, you know, she's somebody who's obviously experienced a great deal of suffering, but she can still smile. Now, I'm sure if I went up and had a deep conversation with her, she'd tell me there's hard days still, but humans can endure. Humans can come through the most remarkable things. And anybody that, you know, doesn't think that's true, go and read, you know, The Happiest Man Alive by Eddie, what's his name? Because that book's just extraordinary.
Does that kind of fly in the face of the culture that we live in though, Jonathan? Our ability to endure the hardship.
Here's the interesting thing. My kids say I have only got one hero. You know, this guy called David Goggins, who people say is the toughest man alive, the hardest man alive. Yeah. Like just the stuff that he does physically, and he was a US Navy SEAL and all that sort of stuff. And there is a huge fascination with him and people like him. And even people like Jordan Peterson, who are talking so much about character and doing hard things. And so there's this perverse cultural awareness that we're torn between Oprah and Jordan Peterson. We're torn between we're the greatest things in the world and we should just own our own beauty and our own brilliance, as well as this other trend which is emerging, which is like maybe we should be doing harder things. Maybe we should be pushing ourselves a bit more than we are. Maybe we should be suffering a bit more for others and doing hard things for others. And so tomorrow morning I'm getting up at 4 a.m. and I'm running, I don't know, probably 30K tomorrow morning. And it's just going to hurt.
Yeah.
But I just want to do it. I want to pursue difficult things. So I've come to this pretty late, Tim and Des. I got frustrated for many, many years. I always thought that if life was difficult, it was because I'd run over someone's cat or God didn't like me. And I'm just at this age now starting to think, oh, maybe it's not all sunshine and rainbows. Maybe it's hard. And if I accept that it's hard and maybe I'm going to grow. Maybe I'm just going to become, you know, maybe I'm just going to become tougher and harder and more interesting, you know, like just when you meet interesting people that have done interesting things, you're like, so yeah, I think when I say life's happening to us, the good and the bad, and you're right. Our culture doesn't really want to talk about difficult. And on that, look, to finish, I know I go on a bit, but I'm like, I believe that we inhabit a culture that really seeks a slave mentality. Like it actually seeks compliance just about everywhere. Yeah. So it seeks compliant, nice consumers.
Yes.
And people that begin to want more from life, more freedom, more independence, more growth, that the culture doesn't like that too much because they can't be managed and corralled. So yeah, I've got a bit of a libertarian streak in that sense. I'm like, I just kind of want to get on with doing interesting things.
Jonathan, in your book, Bridging the Gap, you have a chapter called Threshold Experiences, Chasing Your Limits. Is that essentially what we're talking about here? pushing our limits and pushing our boundaries?
Yeah, there's a psychological principle called liminal spaces. And this is what they used to do in masculine initiation, right? So, you know, masculine initiation, as you guys would know, is almost the same all over the world. Different tribes, they do it slightly differently, but, you know, masculine initiation involves separation from the community. They take boys away and they would put them in situations that would stress them. So some tribes would take kids and put them in a forest. They have to sleep overnight and there'd be mountain lions or whatever prowling around. What the kid didn't know was that the other warriors were nearby watching them. So the kids were actually safe, but they didn't know that. So they were constantly trying to put young men in these spaces, liminal spaces, they call them, where there's enough danger to be dangerous, but not necessarily life-threatening. So we've lost that completely. So I'm a real believer that you've got, if you want an uncommon life, if you really want more, you have got to deliberately create those contexts. And almost nobody wants to do it because we're terrified of rejection. We don't like fear. We love comfort zones. So I've come to it primarily through exercise and training, but also from being on stage in front of 10,000 people, having a background of panic anxiety disorder, right? So yeah, I'm a big believer, guys, that you got to risk. You got to risk it for the biscuit. You got to put yourself in situations that are unpleasant and could backfire.
Unpleasant as opposed to challenging, or including challenging?
Oh, they can be coterminous, right? They can mean the same thing. Like I think of, you know, how the US Navy SEALs do their 6-week induction program. Like it's both. It's really unpleasant and it's really challenging. It's like it's freezing and awful. And so often unpleasant and challenging are going to be pretty close. They're going to be pretty closely related, but it's fear. It's rejection and fear. Like why don't guys listening ask somebody out on a date? Why don't they ask for a promotion? Why don't they quit their job and start a business? Why don't they, you know, say to their wife, our marriage is not particularly great, let's go to work on fixing it? Because we're terrified of rejection and failure. And so we play a small game, and I've done it. But I'm aware of the right question, which is because I think what we do is we sort of think that if we risk it, we could lose everything. And I've often said on stage, I'll say three words. I go, and then what? Yeah. What if you risked it and it didn't work out? Then what? Oh, it'd be terrible. Yeah, it would. But then what? Oh, I wouldn't recover. You probably would. I won't go on for too long, but I think you have to create those environments deliberately.
Yeah, take the risk. Put yourself out there.
Just on the physical side of things, and I mean, I've lived an active lifestyle for 30-odd years. You know, anyone who knows me knows that I'm a regular at gymming and keeping fit. It's a lifestyle for me. It has been and always will be for me now. And you talk about yourself and obviously David Goggins, who, you know, is always running when he does his videos and speaking into a phone as someone's driving alongside of him. But how much, and this is the point, I suppose, to leave guys with, but how much do you think that having the discipline in that area of your life, and I've seen this in my own life, when I'm really disciplined with my exercise and my diet, it absolutely has a knock-on effect in other areas of my life. I mean, that's not to say that it has to be exercise, but I think when we start these little things in a particular area of our life, it absolutely can help dial in other areas of our lives too.
Totally. I say to people, like, you do you, because I'm a bit on the extreme end. And as I said when we talked recently, guys, that, you know, I grew up with a guy, my father, who was terribly overweight and unfit, and I've reacted very much to that, and it eventually became a habit. Those disciplines have kept me alive at times, I think. I look back to when I really got into really serious cycling. I was in a really major depression, and it was that, like, training every morning with elite cyclists so that my cortisol and my, you know, my whole neurochemistry was just jacked by 7 a.m. I think that kept me out of a hole. And for net, like, these days, people go, why do you run at 4 a.m.? I go, because you don't. And because I love solitude, because I love solitude and I don't like anyone. If I see someone at like 5:30 a.m., I'm like, what are you doing? What are you doing? This is where I run. You can't be here. So I love the solitude, those disciplines. I think Karen reckons I have one superpower, which is perseverance. Like I'll just go till death. I just don't quit. I'm incapable of it almost. And running and ultras have taught me that you can keep going. So yeah, you're right, Tim. Like diet for me, giving up drinking, and I'm not telling people to do that. It just worked for me. Those disciplines keep me on an even keel. And I come from a background of a lot of dysfunction, so I have to manage myself pretty carefully.
Mm, yeah. Well, look, note to self, if you're in Jonathan's area tomorrow morning around 4-ish, 4:30, just stay out of his way, first and foremost, because he likes solitude, okay? Don't interrupt his training. And Des and I won't be joining you tomorrow morning. I can attest to that as well. But Jonathan, look, we are wrapping up the show, man. We're out of time, but you know, we never go where we expect to go, but there's always so much in what you say. And we do love the depth that you bring to the show and the way that you just explore things and bring in that brain of yours into these conversations that we have, man. And we're grateful once again for your time on Momentum, and we appreciate it, man. You take care and enjoy your running in the morning, man.
Awesome. Thanks for having me, guys, and I love what you're doing, and just, you know, hope it's a blessing for people listening. So thanks for having me.
You've been listening to Momentum, a show that helps men succeed in life. For more information or to hear this week's show again, go to MomentumAustralia.org. You can also access a whole range of resources to help you on your journey and to get in touch with the team at MomentumAustralia.org. Until next time, keep moving forward with Momentum.